Tehran urging the U.S. president to stop meddling in its affairs, and that in reaction to Biden's comments on the recent riots in Iran. Ukrainian missiles land on a new target in Donetsk. And China's president doubles down on peaceful reunification with Taiwan, but he hints at Beijing having to use force if necessary. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The Iranian foreign minister is reacting to comments made by the U.S. president as regards the wave of riots in the country, calling them meddlesome. The ministry's spokesman says that Joe Biden is backing rioters in the tradition of U.S. officials, a move he described as fishing in troubled waters. Nasser Kanani says that Biden is frustrated by years of futile actions against Iran, adding that his interventions and expressions of surprise won't weaken the country's resolve. The U.S. president has called the Iranian government oppressive, expressing surprise at, using his own words, the courage of people and women taken to the streets. Kanani also stressed that Iran is strong enough not to give in to brutal sanctions and hollow threats. He said Iranians will stand up for their independence and join together to heal wounds inflicting inner defeat on Washington. Now, Tim Anderson is director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, and he tells us how various U.S. administrations have done all they could to weaken Iran.
I think it's very well known by now that Washington, whatever the administration is there, whether it's Obama or Trump or Biden, is going to use all of the resources at their disposal to try and weaken, divide, undermine Iran. And every new opportunity will be seized on, basically, because of course, we know their style of warfare these days is a lot more to do with using proxies, the proxies like the MEK, like the proxies that are in the northern Iraq, like the proxies that are used against Syria, for example, and a constant stream of propaganda to weaken or to confuse their own audiences, principally, basically. I don't think that's really confusing the Iranians, though. It's a long-standing practice of the U.S., and it's emerged in public, and they're not even embarrassed to say it now. They want to starve people, make them desperate, make them rise up against the government, because they know, as they said about Cuba 60 years ago, they said they knew that the Fidel Castro was very popular. The only way for them to try and overthrow the regime there was to make the people desperate and starve. And similarly, you recall Mike Pompeo a few years ago saying that if the Iranian people wanted to eat, they would have to comply with U.S. demands. So it's a very open, direct assault. Of course, it's illegal. It shouldn't be called sanctions. These coercive measures are illegal measures under international law, but they are specifically designed to make people desperate and try and divide people.
An investigative report by the Iranian parliament has concluded that the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini was not due to assault and battery. According to the report, the young woman was assaulted neither during her transfer to the police station nor while being held there. The findings, however, questioned the effectiveness of the first medical response she received. The report says the crowd amassing outside the police station delayed her transfer to the hospital. The Palmer Report has called on those who jumped to conclusions about a cause of Amini's death to correct their position or face prosecution. It says the United States, Israel, and their followers took advantage of such hasty judgments to stir up unrest. Days ago, the Iranian coroner's office also announced that her death was not due to blows to her head or any of her vital organs, but due to cerebral hypoxia, multiple organ failure. Amini died after 3 days in intensive care. Her death triggered a wave of riots in the country. The Iranian judiciary says that four inmates have died of smoke inhalation in a blaze that occurred at Tehran's Evin prison. According to judiciary officials, the four victims were serving time for theft. 61 prisoners were injured, while 70 others were rescued when the fire broke out late on Friday. 51 received outpatient treatment. 10 others are in hospital, 4 in critical condition. Officials say that a blaze started the prison's sewing workshop after a number of prisoners got into a fight. Meantime, security forces say that they prevented an attempt at a jailbreak by some of the inmates serving time for violent crimes. The situation at the penitentiary has now returned to normal. Time now for the news review. Iran's top general says that the country won't tolerate the presence of thousands of armed terrorists close to its borders and will continue military operations against them. Chief of Staff of Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Baghri, was referring to the presence of terrorists backed by the U.S. and Israel in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. He said that Iran has frequently warned the Iraqi Kurdistan's officials against allowing such armed groups to have bases there. Baghri said that the terrorist groups should either give up their arms and turn into non-military groups or be expelled by officials of the Kurdistan region. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has launched a series of multi-pronged military attacks on terrorist bases in Iraqi Kurdistan. The bases played a role in fueling violent riots across Iran in recent weeks. Now to discuss that, I'll be joined by John Bosnich, who's a journalist, activist, and political analyst in Belgrade. Also with me is Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author in London. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Now, John, this is what Iran, what the story is. Multiple warnings, and unfortunately it fell on deaf ears, and then in different ways, as I just said in the intro, Iran has been threatened by the presence of terrorists on Iraqi soil, the Kurdistan region. And that's why IRGC decided to, from time to time, to launch operations against them. Let's have your comment on this.
This is a natural right of every sovereign country to protect itself from external attack, and especially from terror attacks. Iran is working fully within its own legal rights to protect its territory from ongoing attacks and any threatened attack. This is nothing new, and Iran has every right to do so.
Okay. Marcus, Iran and Iraq have good relations, and but you know what the presence of foreign forces has been wreaking havoc there. Iraqi parliamentarians a few years ago asked for foreign forces led by the U.S. to leave. They are still there. And Iran believes that this also has to do with what's happening in the Iraqi Kurdistan region.
Well, these are particularly critical times for Iran. What with the hand of America at work on Iran's border with Iraq, and also at work inside of Iran itself. And in regard to the latter, I am referring to the small yet violent murderous protests which occurred in Iran and which bore all the hallmarks of how America historically attempts to incite civil disobedience in a country of geostrategic importance which does not bow down to American diktats. And I am of the firm opinion that these particularly critical times for Iran and for the Iranian people fall at a time when Iran is steadfast in its support for Russia. So I believe that America and some of its allies are attempting to weaken the Russian army in Ukraine and Russia as a whole by attempting to weaken Iran. And in regard to Iraq, we have to understand that Iraq is not a vassal state of America's. A very good modern day example of a colony of America's is Serbia, whose president, one Aleksandar Vučić, constantly talks about how he is an independent leader and he has internal enemies all around him. Well, that is simply a way of maintaining the facade that both he and Serbia are independent. But no, when it comes to Iraq, the Americans have considerable influence inside of Iraq, particularly in the north of the country and in the center, and very little influence in the south of Iraq. So the Americans are clearly amassing terrorist forces in the north of Iraq on the border with Iran to try and weaken Iranian national security at a time when Iran is very fervent in its political support to Russia concerning the war in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I would say to the Kurds of northern Iraq to be very careful as to who they get into bed with, because it was the Americans who supplied Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons, and then Saddam Hussein used those chemical weapons in Halabja in the late 1980s, which caused the deaths of thousands of Kurds. So the Kurds should be very cautious about having entered an unholy alliance with Washington.
Okay. And John, in your opinion, what's U.S. Plan agenda for Iraq? When they were present there, you see what happened to Iraq. And that when they're there, they say we're just securing and training the Iraqi forces there. And does the U.S. really want to see Iraq prosper and also at the same time have good relations with its neighbors like Iran?
Well, the United States has a tendency of using other countries for its own interests first. It does have allies, but in the case of Iraq, it's using Iraq as a tool against the country of Iran. And this was part of the original American military plan in the region, first to bring down Iraq and then to use Iraq using proxy parties like the Kurds to attack Iran. And we're now seeing that Iran is not going to allow further encroachment in its region. And this is also tightly connected with not just Russia, but with China. So we have a situation in which America has come up against a defensive group that is not ready to yield to further American encroachment in the area.
Okay. And Marcus, in a couple of minutes, what do you think is a solution to the threat that Iran is feeling because of the presence of terrorists close to its borders in the Iraqi Kurdistan?
Under international law, Iran has every right to ensure that its borders are 100% secure. And I believe that the Iranian government has many, many years of experience and is exceedingly adept in ensuring the security of Iran's borders. And we also have to take into consideration that Albania, which is a NATO member and a strategic friend and ally to Washington, is awash with terrorist training camps. Terrorist training camps which comprise personnel from the horrendous, murderous MEK terrorist organization, which has immense blood of Iranian civilians, men, women, and children, on its hands. So the Iranians will undoubtedly take steps to ensure that its border with Iraq is secure, and also the Iranian government exerts influence inside of Iraq. Iran has a good relationship with the Iraqi government, which again takes me back to what I said moments ago. Whilst America has very considerable influence inside of Iraq, nonetheless, the Iraqi government is not a colony of America's, and that is demonstrated by the Iraqi government's close relationship with Iran.
Okay, thank you so much for your comments and insight. John Bostich in Belgrade, Marcus Papadopoulos in London. Moving on, the Ukrainian military has launched attacks on an administrative building in the eastern city of Donetsk. Here's our correspondent, Jana Miller, from Donetsk, explaining why this new escalation is important.
Now, all morning, the center of Donetsk has been hit by Ukrainian artillery. You can hear the sound of explosions across the city. And this strike here is perhaps the most important strike of this morning. It's the central administration building for the city of Donetsk. Now, of course, Ukraine has been shelling Donetsk for months now, indeed intermittently for the last 8 years. When they're not trying to hit military targets, they focus on civilian targets. More often than not, when I get to the site of the explosion, it turns out to be a bus station or a market with bodies lying in the street, or they try to hit water infrastructure or electricity. Up till now, they've generally held off hitting administration centres. Why is that? One reason may well be so as not to provoke the Russians for hitting their decision-making centres in Kiev. But of course, just over a week ago, we had the attack, presumably by Ukrainians, on the Kerch Bridge. And after that, Russia started hitting decision-making centres or widening their parameters of targets in the rest of Ukraine. So this strike here by Ukraine may well be a retaliation in turn for Russia's strikes, a sign here that this war is only going to escalate at the moment as Russia widens its parameters of targets, and Ukraine here in the city of Donetsk does the same.
The Chinese president says his government is committed to peaceful reunification with Taiwan, but might have to use force if necessary. Xi Jinping rejected any form of separatism and interference over the Several Island, which China considers as part of its territory. Beijing is strongly opposed to Washington's military ties with Taipei, calling the U.S. military presence in the region provocative. President Xi also pointed out that Beijing is against a Cold War mentality in international politics and interference in other countries' internal affairs. He praised the current stable conditions in Hong Kong, which he said has made a transition from chaos to governance. He insisted that Hong Kong be ruled by patriots, reaffirming 2020 legislation that bans non-patriots from positions of political power in the city. She was addressing the five-yearly Congress of the ruling Communist Party. A Palestinian youth has succumbed to injuries he sustained during an attack by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Salfit. 31-year-old Mujahid Ahmed Mohammed Daoud died after he was critically shot in the chest early on Saturday. He was rushed to a hospital in Ramallah, where he was announced dead. Tensions have run high across the occupied territories in past months. The Israeli military presses on with crackdown against Palestinians following a series of deadly attacks on the regime forces. Resistance groups say the attacks are in response to Israel's atrocities. Nearly 170 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since the start of this year, 15 in October alone. And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. Tawakkul means that in every situation you rely on Allah and place your hopes in Him. Have you seen how when some people face difficulties in life, when they go through hardship and they exhaust every visible means at their disposal to rectify their situation without success, what do? Have you seen or heard this? They will do one of a few things. Either they will surrender, when nothing they do seems to work, or they will resign themselves to fate, or they will take the path of least resistance. They won't give up, but in practice they will do whatever is easiest. Others end their own lives. For example, someone gains power in a country and little by little, other powers wear him down. Every day, somewhere in his dominion, there is some clamor against him. Then when he has no choices left, when he is utterly humiliated, tired and dejected, he takes his own life. He ends it. These are the routes open to someone when they don't have Allah and find themselves in a blind alley. When they reach a dead end and they see that they have nowhere left to turn, no escape, these people will take one of three options. They will either surrender to fate, take the path of least resistance, or they will kill themselves. However, for someone who believes in Allah and find themselves at a dead end, these options are not available to them. Their dignity won't let them follow these paths. But there is one door that is always open to them. And what door is that? Placing their trust in Allah. They will say, "This is a dead end. But the Allah I know makes doors out of dead ends." What is a dead end? For Allah, there are no dead ends for us. In Allah's hands, every dead end is a door. There is always a way.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Is there a dead end worse than the Battle of Uhud? The few soldiers of Islam, preoccupied with the pursuit of spoils on the battlefield, forgot to guard the flanks. Because of the heedlessness of a few soldiers, the Quraysh were able to outflank the Muslims, who had laid down their swords and dismounted their horses to collect spoils. Suddenly, they see themselves surrounded by the enemy on all sides, attacking them. Now, it's clear what an unarmed, unprepared soldier will do in this situation, isn't it? He runs. He runs for his life. Shaitan calls out through the voice of a wicked person that the Prophet has been slain. It's obvious, Shaitan is always doing this. Shaitan's plans are clear, and his helpers are clear. He is always putting doubts in people's minds. He is always sapping their morale, telling them they failed, that the Prophet has died. In this crisis, in this dead end, what does a faithful person who relies on Allah do? Is there a dead end greater than this? There is no way out. Your own soldiers have thrown down their weapons and fled. The enemies have surrounded you on all sides. No one is coming to your aid. But there is still a way out, to put your trust in Allah, to have hope.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Rising rivalries between the U.S. and China are set to dominate the coming years in the 21st century. That is because the U.S. has unveiled its long-delayed national security strategy, where China is named as the most consequential geopolitical challenge for the regime in Washington. That means that Washington is prioritizing winning over China, as Beijing is seen as the only global rival to the U.S. Jake Sullivan, the U.S. National Security Advisor, said, "The People's Republic of China harbors the intention and increasingly the capacity to reshape the international order in favor of one that tilts the global playing field to its benefit." The U.S. strategy further insists that China represents the most consequential challenge to the global order. It also says the U.S. must win the economic arms race with the superpower if it hopes to retain its global influence. The strategy has warned that China's rapid advances in technology is aimed at molding the world order. The strategy is in line with the rhetoric pursued by the Biden administration and his predecessor. Biden officials have accused Russia and China of looking to change the so-called rules-based order. The term has come to be seen as a synonym for Washington-led world order. The Biden administration has entangled itself in a number of global crises, including the war in Ukraine. The Washington regime encouraged the war in Ukraine by sending more weapons into the conflict zone. Washington is using the crisis to contain Russia. And by encouraging its allies to sever their energy ties with Moscow, Washington is trying to push European countries into its own sphere of influence. Furthermore, Washington is stoking tensions in the East Asia region by strengthening its ties with the Chinese Taipei. Back in August 2022, the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan, drawing an angry reaction from China. Beijing has warned that it will not tolerate Washington's meddlesome interference in its own affairs. But Washington's increasingly belligerent behavior in Europe and East Asia has pushed Russia and China closer together. They have forged closer ties in a variety of fields, including energy, business, and defense areas. Furthermore, both Moscow and Beijing are key members of the BRICS groups of countries and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Two bodies are playing key roles in shifting the Western-led balance toward a multipolar world. Russia and China have also forged closer ties with countries like Iran and India, which are emerging powers in the shifting geostrategic relations worldwide. It is now widely believed that Washington's ambitions to still lead the world is facing tough challenges. It appears that the regime in Washington has no longer the capability that it once possessed to dictate its hegemony.
Iran hosting the 36th International Conference on Islamic Unity in the capital, Tehran, which hosts 200 Shia and Sunni clerics, as well as thinkers from some 60 different countries. The annual event puts into discussion the challenges faced by the Muslim world. It's widely believed that uniting Muslims in the region and worldwide would be a great step in alleviating the problems they're facing. Violence and wars are killing Muslims in Yemen, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. Imam Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, proposed the idea in the 1980s to bring Muslims together against the imperialist aggressions and interventions of Western powers. Over the years, Iran has championed the cause of Islamic unity and brotherhood. This is when many other Muslim countries have brazenly become facilitators and enablers of America's neo-imperialism. The highlight of this year's event was a speech by Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi to the participants of the conference. During his speech, President Raisi hailed resistance as the only viable path to confronting the Israeli regime. Raisi further said that history has proven wrong those countries who assumed that negotiations would save Palestine.
The biggest human rights violators are the US, Israel, and some Western countries, despite their claims to be human rights defenders. See their record, what they have done to their own people and the people around the globe.
Raisi also referred to previous deals reached with the Tel Aviv regime on the issue of Palestine, saying the regime has refused to honor the commitments it has made. He also criticized the Arab governments that normalized their ties with Israel and the Zionist regime. He said the U.S. and the Israeli regime are trying to marginalize Palestinians through normalization deals. Raisi was referring to the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan and Morocco, which normalized their ties with Israel in late 2020 under deals pushed by former U.S. President Donald Trump. One of the issues that was highlighted in this conference was how Muslims in Palestine are brutally oppressed by the Israeli regime, which is supported by the West and some regional Arab states that have betrayed the cause of Palestine. The normalization deals with the Israeli regime has emboldened Tel Aviv to carry out more war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories.
It's no surprise to us that the House of Saud has teamed up with the Israeli regime. They claim to be Muslims, but in fact they are the puppets of the Israelis and do what Tel Aviv dictates to them.
So far this year, more than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds amid a massive increase in Israeli military raids. Israel has killed five times as many Palestinians in 2022 than it killed in the same period in 2021. And on the issue of Palestinian prisoners, nearly 300 rights groups have condemned the continued detention of Palestinians in Israeli prisons. They called on the international community to act against the crimes of Israel. The groups also censured Israel for its administrative detention of Palestinians. Conferences like the one held in Iran helped the Palestinian cause by continuing to point to the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime. If the Palestinian cause is not the most important issue for Muslims and the wider world, then Israeli forces will continue using excessive force in their dealings with the Palestinians without being held accountable.
Thank you.
French leaders have seemingly found a solution to the country's energy crisis. Puffer jackets and turtlenecks have become the newest fashion trend in the Élysée, as ministers and the president try to imply a message to the public: wrap up warm for winter. That's while, as the cold season approaches, the nation struggles to afford heating. French motorists have been made to wait in long lines across the country to refuel their vehicles as petrol pumps run dry amid ongoing strikes at the country's oil refineries and storage sites. Almost a third of the petrol stations had problems getting deliveries of fuel as tanker drivers continue their strike over low wages and harsh working conditions amid a cost-of-living crisis in France. So, to cut the long story short, Macron is up to his neck in trouble, and his government's winter wardrobe messaging has drawn accusations of being out of touch with everyday reality. The country's far-right opposition leader, Marine Le Pen, mocked the government saying, "Don't have enough heating? Let them wear cashmere." And Gaspard Ganser, an advisor to former president François Hollande, labeled the idea grotesque and paternalistic. Paris has come up with an energy efficiency plan to get through the winter without blackouts. Homes and offices heated to a maximum of 19 Celsius degrees. No hot water in public buildings, no lit advertising overnight, a ban on doors left open in heated or air-conditioned shops, reduced temperatures in swimming pools and gyms. These are some examples of the action France is taking to save energy. However, environmentalists have accused the French government of promoting tiny measures while failing to take enough action on the climate crisis. They say unenforced and voluntary measures are ineffective. Also, scores of French intellectuals have urged the nation to rise in protest against President Emmanuel Macron's failure to improve economic conditions amid rising inflation. The current situation troubles the French government as a foretaste of problems to come, a potential winter of discontent. Now, the question is, will Macron get his head out of his turtleneck? Thousands of demonstrators gathered in Paris to protest soaring inflation and high cost of living, demanding that France pull out completely from membership in the US-led NATO military alliance. They demanded that President Emmanuel Macron resign, calling on his government to stop supplying arms to Ukraine. Ever since the Ukrainian crisis began, causing a severe energy crisis across Europe, anti-NATO sentiments have been rising among Europeans. Similar protests have been held across the European Union against soaring inflation and the rising cost of living caused by sanctions imposed on Russia in the wake of the Ukraine war. Since the beginning of the war in Ukraine in late February, Western countries have slapped waves of sanctions on Russia. In response, Moscow has either choked up or lessened its gas exports to the rest of Europe, saying it would only resume the gas flow after the economic sanctions were lifted. Disruption in supply chains has led to higher fuel and food prices across the EU, driving inflation to record levels and causing the cost of living to soar. The European Union leaders accused the Kremlin of wielding energy as a weapon, cutting gas supplies in retaliation for sanctions. The protesters also called on the US-led NATO coalition to immediately stop supplying arms to Ukraine and to work to resolve the simmering crisis through diplomacy.
I have three priorities for our economy: growth, growth, and growth.
Flip-flopping and humiliating U-turn are the terms used by members of parliament and various media outlets on Liz Truss's 180 on her 45% tax cut for the rich. Truss and her chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng thought that a tax cut for the rich would create more jobs and then eventually lead up to tax cuts for the general public as a part of her trickle-down economic plans in what is being referred to in the media as mini-budget.
How is that fair that you get a tax cut of over 2,000 while people on average income see much less?
So everybody is getting a tax cut, and the situation that we were in was we were putting up taxes. That was the immediate situation that we were in. We were facing a situation where the tax burden was at a 70-year high, and that was completely unacceptable. The Prime Minister campaigned for the leadership on the basis that we were going to reduce taxes, and that's exactly what we've done.
Truss and Kuerteng were quickly forced to turn back on their decision, as the plan was received very poorly by Truss's own Tory party, who threatened to vote against the tax cuts.
I don't comment on market movements, but what is good for the economy?
Who caused it?
What is good for the economy?
The tax cuts would have been the largest set of unfunded tax cuts for the rich in over 50 years and a huge gamble on public finances and the health of UK economy, according to Welsh Finance Minister Rebecca Evans. When the news broke out about her tax cut plans, the British pound hit a record low against the dollar, prompting a $73 billion budget allocation by Bank of England to shore up the markets before the pound partially recovered. The British Premier, however, blamed communication errors in how the package was presented. And some communication error that was. The kind that shocked markets and voters and couldn't get her the support she needed by her own Conservative Party before she had to back off on it. The controversy in her economic plan comes after the worst start to a new administration in recent memory in the UK, with people already questioning how long Britain's new Prime Minister will remain in office. One might even say trust is fading in trust. The UK's GDP growth has been on a slow but steady decline since 2014, from 1% down to 0%. It was the pandemic, however, that completely flatlined the UK economy, causing the single biggest slump in its GDP since its GDP was recorded in 1961. By extension, according to the Office for National Statistics, the UK consumer price inflation hits just over 10% in the 12 months to July. That is the highest inflation rate in the country since the early 80s. Things aren't much different outside the UK, across the Green Continent. Certainly the pandemic caused its own set of problems for European economy, but perhaps it was the Ukraine war and the subsequent food and energy crisis that really cemented Europe's ongoing and expected economic downturn. Drastic plans to manage the crisis is being implemented across Europe. 3-hour power cuts to homes and businesses are expected during this winter in the UK. Germany rationed hot water, dimmed streetlights, and shut down swimming pools. French people are using more and more wood and less gas to heat their homes. Buildings in Italy will have 15 extra days without central heating. This all begs the question, is the insistence of the West on prolonging the Ukraine war really worth the damages it is causing their economy and their people?
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
Farmud Boris to lo
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. My dear sisters and brothers from all around the world, you are listening to a new episode for a better life. I hope you're all doing well. This is Beta. I'm a student. I'm really interested in Islamic topics, especially in ethicals and morals issues. I'm so honored to be your host for today's episode and this session. Nowadays, we are living in a world that is full of people claiming to be dedicated to ethics and morals, But as you know, deep in this world, when you are thinking about other people's behavior, you will understand that nobody is actually perfect. And we're human, and as you know, human is to err, so we don't actually expect anyone to be perfect. But the thing is, when you claim to be perfect, this is another story. You know what? Because a human being is like, okay, I want to show myself better than what exactly I am. They want to, discuss about some profound philosophical theories that only stop the human intellect. And this is not what we want in this session. For example, a human being is just seeking for an answer to many unnecessary discussions, to many unnecessary questions with regard to the human character, such as, the identification of human souls or something like that. For example, they ask whether our soul is created or eternal, or are good morals earned or gifted, or some questions like that, which maybe comes to your mind too. And, it's something natural to have this kind of question in your mind. But today, in this episode, our aim is to present the practical examples of the perfect morals of our holy imams and encourage your dear listeners to walk in their footsteps. So I want you to have a short break, then we'll come back and talk about this topic more and more. Stay tuned.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back to this episode of Today You're Listening to For a Better Life. As you know, just as man is created from four elements, the basics of ethical values are also four. That I want to count them. They are wisdom, chastity, justice, and valor. I'm going to talk about the affection in our holy imams that is somehow really tangible. And, it is touching our souls that they are so affectionate about the below creature. What is the reason? As you know, we're human beings with many emotional aspects. A more interesting topic, an aspect of morals called affection for fellow creatures. We are all human beings with the same emotions, with the same aspects of persona and something like that. So we all have some feelings towards each other, which can be good or bad. These feelings can be hatred, can be love, can be anything that you have felt in your whole life. But the thing is, when you go and study through the way our Ame and our imams lived, in the past, you'll understand that they were really affectionate about other creatures, other people in the society. It was like, okay, I'm going to consider all the good things that will help other people, even if it means that I have to suffer from some sufferings in this road. maybe this question comes to your mind that, okay, why should one person live in a way to suffer or something like that for other people? What could be the reason? Why I'm not like that? Why I'm so selfish? I'm not going to answer all of your questions because I'm here to turn on your mind. There is a dark fact about us as human beings, that is, interactions with other people. We are searching for some benefits. I just don't want to generalize this fact about all the people, but we're all humans and we have a lot in common. You know what? But this affection is somehow different in holy imams. Right now, we're gonna go for a break. We'll come back soon. Stay tuned.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is For a Better Life. I'm just talking about the affection towards creatures by the holy imams. You know what? I just told you that there is a dark fact in our lives that we all do something just for some special benefits. What is the reason of this? It is that we are somehow selfish in our lives or something like that. But this affection was only for the sake of Allah when it comes to Aimee and holy imams. And neither any show off nor any personal gain is present in it. You know what? Seeing the hardship of every Muslim, they felt, somehow greatly hurt and tried their best to remove it. Most of the time, they themselves had to suffer hardships in this regard, but they bore it willingly. But as a human being, there are many questions in our mind that what could be the reason of this non-profit affection towards fellow creatures? Let me give you an example of this no-end ocean of affection in our holy imams. When the verse, "Oh, ye who believe," when you consult the apostle, then offer something in charity before a consultation, was revealed, the Prophet told Ali, assalamu alaikum, go and command those people to pay charity. How much did I ask them to pay? Asked Ali. 1 dinar, replied the Prophet. Ali said, they're unable to pay this much. 1/2 dinar, said the Prophet. They cannot even pay this much, said Ali. The Prophet said, 1 grain of gold. Ali said, maybe they cannot even afford this much. The Prophet said, oh Ali, you're very kind to the people. All right, tell them to give only 1 dirham. Amir al-Mu'minin used to say, the reduction in this command was due to me. It really touches my soul when these precious teachers of all time can be this kind towards other people. What is your opinion about another story? These are the lessons we have to study in our lives, nothing more, nothing less. And you know what? They are the best teachers of all time and study their lives for a better life. During the course of Imam Ali's caliphate, Amir al-Mu'minin saw an old woman carrying a load of food grain on her back. She was out of breath due to her weakness. He moved forward and took the load on his shoulders, carried it to her house. This is one of other stories, another story that really touches my soul about this affection towards fellow creatures. The thing is, you're responsible towards anything you are surrounded by. But being affectionate toward them is a different level of responsibility that we have to try to grow in our souls and personalities. As you know, we're running out of time, and I want to just tell you that be responsible towards other people, other creatures, and try to be affectionate towards them. Before everything, you have to be affectionate about yourself, and then other people will be affected by your affectionate feelings, by your emotions too. That was all for today's episode. I wish you just enjoyed all this, and I leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. May He protect and bless you with all His blessing. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand He knows.
tear on every eyelash.
She knows
every thought I have and every word I share.
Hungry humans. Part 2.
This is the battlefield. A manifestation of humans' cruelty. Everything happens fast and in a riotous way in the battlefield. But sometimes wars are silent and hidden with an attractive and charming look. Such wars are sometimes more threatening and result in more victims. Like the war that I want to tell you about. A war that you may not have even imagined, but we are in the middle of the battlefield. I want to start my story with a question. Why is fast food so popular in this era? One recipe and one taste. Everything is similar. Ready-to-eat foods are without stories because there is no time to tell stories in the middle of the battlefield. You can find them in these hypermarkets. There is no story here. The story of each product is summarized in barcodes and a few lines and numbers below them. It doesn't matter where the food comes from, they say here instead of everywhere. Here, like on the battlefield, everything happens fast.
So I would not say that it caused the Industrial Revolution, but I would go so far as to say that in England, it helped make the Industrial Revolution possible because it sustained the people who were doing the industry. When factory workers got off shift, the last thing they really wanted to do was cook. And right outside the factory gates were people who had set up carts with ovens, and they would bake the potatoes, and they would sell them for cheap. And people would have a hot baked potato coming right off the factory floor, a nice instant treat. And that was, in a sense, the beginning of modern street food. So the pace of life began to increase. I think the industrialization happened first, and the potato became necessary for it to continue or made it easier.
Can you give us a talk about the suffering imposed, for example, to hands in factory farming?
In some cases, the confinement is very tight. An example of that would be for hens who are laying eggs. So the standard industrial cage, and that's not just for one hen, that might be for four or five hens. So each hen in this cage has just a very small amount of space